The Torah content from now through Pesach has been sponsored by the Kofsky family in loving memory of Adira, who loved big ideas and asking big questions.
Started. Okay, so we are not finishing Hilchos Teshuva, Chas V'Shalom, but like trying to wrap up at least the questions that we raised this week that we didn't answer yet, right? So I believe the main questions are, the main question left over from Monday, which we didn't answer, is why the Rambam presents Teshuva Gemurah before Teshuva, right? And then there were a couple other questions on Teshuva Gemurah that we didn't fully answer. The classic question of like, do you need to be in the exact same situation or not? I might want to touch on that. And then there's the question, the outstanding question that we had on the definition of Teshuva was about the Nechama, right? Which is that in the normal course of events, you have Nechama and then that kicks off your whole Teshuva process, right? Regret. What?
Nechama?
Yeah, regret. Nechama is regret. Yeah, you always forget that.
This is recorded, right?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, between Yisnachem Asha Avar is Yishu regret, right? Hashem says, Nichamti ki asisim, I regretted making man, right? So in the process of tshuva, Nechama comes after, sorry, regret comes after tshuva. So what's the sense in that? Right, so let's start with that question. What do you say about that? Why should regret come after tshuva? And in case this matters, let's actually look at the pasuk of Yirmiyahu that he quotes in context. Yirmiyahu 31... 15 through 19, which is the Haftorah of the second day of Rosh Hashanah. I'm just going to read it in English. Thus said Hashem, restrain your voice from weeping and your eyes from tears, for there is reward for your accomplishment, the word of Hashem, and they will return from the enemy's land. There is hope for your future, the word of Hashem, and your children will return to their border. I have indeed heard Ephraim moaning, you have chastised me and I have become chastened like an untrained calf. Bring me back to you and I shall return, for you are Hashem my God. And here's our pasuk. For after my returning, I regretted, and after my being was made aware of my sinfulness, I slapped my thigh in anguish. I was ashamed and also humiliated, for I bore the disgrace of my youth. Is Ephraim my favorite son or a delightful child that whenever I speak of him, I remember him more and more? Therefore, my inner self yearns for him, and I will surely take pity on him, the word of Hashem. I don't know if that matters, but always looking at the context is good. Yeah, so why is the regret after tshuva?
Well, I guess it kind of depends on the definition of regret.
Yes,
but,
you have to go there.
I regret as I regret.
Beautiful definition. You're saying good. Say better.
That regret is like a feeling you have that I should, that I dislike the fact that I did this thing and I don't want to do it in the future.
Yeah.
That it would make sense that having that feeling would happen after you've done the process of teshuva and you've changed your outlook on this action.
Okay. Yeah. I want to ask a prodding question to delve into that in a second. But yeah, because yeah.
I think there's also like an intellectual basis for the feeling. Which
yeah.
Like, what was I thinking back then?
Yeah.
Had I known, like, how this is going to result, like, why, man, I wish I knew that. Like, I wish I had thought that.
So, yeah.
You're not just regretting the action, but like also the lack of the information.
Okay. I think that's the key distinction here, right? In other words, when you do the sin and you feel guilt, guilt is not the same thing as regret.
Right.
Guilt you can feel just by knowing that the thing was wrong, right? But regret is when you can actually look back on the chet and say, wow, I was way off base. Like, I gave into this emotion. There are these consequences. Like, I distanced myself from God in a certain sense, you know, or in this specific sense. And you can only do that after you've done the actual tshuva process, right? Because tshuva is when you're actually like, in order to do to yigmor belibo shel yaseh od, in order to resolve to not do it again, you have to do that changing of yourself. And only when you've changed yourself can you like look back on that past self and say like, whoa, I was off base.
Started.
Yeah.
But then only after the sugar process do you think, oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, so I got to say this thing just because of it's not directly related to the Rambam, but my mashal about guilt is when I was in yeshiva in the old building, we had, I don't know who designed this, but they put a smoke detector in the kitchen, okay? And when the smoke detector would go off, all the smoke detectors in all the rooms in the building would go off, okay? So what would happen, it was a frequent occurrence that you'd be like sleeping, okay, at like 11 p.m., and then all the fire alarms would go off, and you'd have to like run outside because you didn't know if the building was on fire and you were going to die or if someone was just cooking at night. Okay. So anyway, let's not get into particulars. So I think let's talk about that later. Okay. So that I think is a very good mushroom for guilt. Okay. Guilt is not an indication that you did something wrong. Okay. Because you can have guilty feelings when you didn't do anything wrong, or you could do stuff wrong and not have guilty feelings. Okay. You can have a fire that doesn't set off the alarm, and you can have the alarm set off and there's no fire. Right. But like an alarm, like the yeshiva's alarm, guilt is a signal that you should investigate whether you did something wrong, you know? And if you find that you did something wrong, then you should do tshuva and address it. And then the nechama is when you actually look back and you were like, whoa, like this was I was way out, I was outside of reality. Like that was the wrong thing to do. And that can only be done after the tshuva. Yeah.
Well, so I want to take the blessing you said, which is like only done after you've done tshuva.
Yeah.
Maybe it's similar to what I was saying before, but like the reason that that's true is because until you've changed the way you're looking at this action or the way that you were doing this action, you won't be able to look back on that and say that I was in the wrong.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And when you are in the throes of the guilt, you can identify it as wrong and you can feel bad about it, but you can't truly see it as wrong until you've transformed.
This is an observation that leads me to have a question of how it works, or is it not a consideration in this regard? So we use the word regret. Like you can, right now we're talking very much on how it's inspired by the guilt. But,
Or just to be more specific, the tshuva is inspired by the guilt, yeah. And then the regret comes from the tshuva.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm kind of looking at it as a transitive property eventually.
Yeah.
But if I took the wrong road or something,
yeah.
just took the wrong direction,
yeah.
I wasn't from a moral anything. I thought I was the right road.
Right.
And then I'm like, wow, now I'm stuck in this ditch or something.
Right.
I really regret taking this way.
Yeah.
It's not really an emotional component to I feel badly about having taken this way. So obviously we know that that's the case. We can have a regret without having an emotional attachment to that regret necessarily. Maybe we don't like the outcome, but we don't feel something. There's no judgment on our state of mind.
Well, I don't know.
I'm asking, how does that, can you in this situation have regret without having the, look back at something and say, well, at the other hand, I didn't know.
I hear what you're asking. Chaim's jumping to say something. So, yeah.
It's not like we're saying that you can't have regret without understanding what is wrong. Right? You don't necessarily have to have this emotional feeling in order to eventually come to that,
That's what I'm saying.
This is how much is wrong. We're not saying that that's wrong. That's what guilt is. You don't have
to. Right. You can engage in tshuva without having guilt.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, that's my question.
Okay, yeah, you can engage into it without having guilt. I thought I understood your question differently, which is that is regretting the taking the wrong road, is that regret of the same nature as the regret in the tshuva process? And I wanted to say that, yes, it's only quantitatively different, and taking the wrong road is not an avera. I think someone, let's say, for example, I'll give you an example. This summer, when I was driving to Montana, I got on the wrong, I got turned around without realizing it. And it added an hour to my trip, making a eight hour drive to a 9 hour drive. And and by the time I got there, it impacted my sleep and I had less of a sleep and whatever. So I think someone who really valued their time and their mental clarity would be I harmed myself by doing this, and I wish I had known, I wish I had been vigilant and checking, my Google Maps or whatever, so I think it's just quantitatively different than an actual avera. And also it's not actually an avera. Yeah.
Right. I
have
a different one.
Yeah.
I didn't know, knowing what you did wrong in order to happen, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's still not the total end process of the end of the law. The law is you want to be able to get wrong and say, I don't want to do that yet. But can't you investigate what you did, realize I did that wrong and I regret it, and then say I'm not going to do that again? I'm not sure how we're still answering why in this order.
Because I'm so what I'm saying is that the first three steps that he has in this paragraph are all what he's calling like the teshuva part of the tshuva, right? In this pasuk Yirmiyahu, it is referring to those first three steps as teshuva, right? Because it says afrei shuvi nichanti, right? So the essential tshuva is azivas hachet, removing from your plans and then resolving not to do it again, right? And I'm saying that in order to resolve not to do it, well, really, in order to do all the three, you need to have made these changes and done the self-examination to be able to resolve not to do it again. In other words, it's not just like the way you said, I don't know how Davka you were being when you said it. You said, I don't want to do it again. You can not want to do it again from the very beginning, but you can't resolve not to do it again until you've gone through that inner transformation. Because I'm saying that, okay, well, maybe I'll be more precise. You can't resolve not to do it again without going through this inner transformation that generates the actual nechama. Okay, because I don't think it would make sense if the Rambam stated the nechama in any other place. Meaning, I think he has to state that by stating it this way and by quoting from the pasuk, the nechama can only follow tshuva. If you haven't completed tshuva, you can't have this full nechama.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Why
did that investigation not lead to a commitment to not do it again? To me, I would say there must be something lacking.
Here's
what I'm saying, right? So
it's like almost like he isn't buying that happened, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
He just isn't formally saying, and now I'm doing this thing. And
okay, I think I got it. Okay, so let me review the basic thing. There's a difference between logical order and chronological order, right? And the example I like using is the chronological order is appetizer, entree, dessert, but the logical order is entree, appetizer, dessert. Why? Because appetizer, the definition of appetizer is that which whets your appetite for the entree. It gets your appetite going, right? So you can't have appetizer without entree, okay? Even though chronologically appetizer comes first, right? So what I'm saying here is that chronologically, the tshuva and the nechama can be simultaneous,
okay,
right? But logically, the nechama is predicated on you having gone through a tshuva process. Because the nechama... Okay, all right, good, yeah. That clarifies it, though. Yeah, that's good. Okay. Quick answer to the tshuva gemara question, just to think about, because this is our last session this week. So again, the question was, why does the Rambam define tshuva gemura before and go on at length before he's even talked about what tshuva is, right? So this is not a question. Obviously, you can't understand what tshuva gemura is without tshuva. This is more of a question on the Rambam's presentation. So I think the answer might be like this: is if the Rambam presented tshuva first and then said what the complete form of it is, you might think that tshuva gemura. Sorry, you might think that tshuva is essentially about the results. Okay, that the real key of tshuva is that I don't do the thing again, and the case where that's going to be most evident is when you're in the exact same situation and you don't do it again. Okay, but the way I understand tshuva gemura is what makes tshuva gemura good is that it's an act of bechira. Okay, that the guy who is old and doesn't commit the chait with a woman again, and the guy who is young and in the throes of the desire and doesn't commit the chait of the woman again, both of them are achieving the same result. They're both not doing the chait again, but the young person is exercising, his tshuva is a greater act of bechira because he is resisting his yetzer hara and all the temptations of doing this and still doing it again. So by placing Tshuva Gemura first and highlighting the paradigm Tshuva is the one which is a full act of Bechira where you're grappling with your Yetzer. And then he says what Tshuva is, which is that you don't do it again. You know, it's just a clear presentation of this. And I think I can bring a raya from Rashi on the Gemara where the Rambam gets this from. The Gemara, there's several problems with how the Rambam gets this, but I'm just going to read it really quickly here. So the Gemara, which is the source of the Rambam, were you asking me, Chizkiyahu, on Monday where the Rambam gets all this stuff from?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like this is an example of, so this is where the Rambam gets his Tshuva Gemara from. He says, hold on. Hechi dami bal teshuva. So what is a case of bal teshuva? So I think the Rambam's version says, what is a case of bal teshuva gemura? I think that's the consensus. Amar Rav Yehuda kagon shebas liado davar avera pam rishona ushnia. Okay, Rambam's version says just one time. So a matter of an avera comes to you once. Once, and then you are confronted with it a second time. The nitzel hamenu, and then you're saved from it. Mechavi Rav Yehuda said that it's a case ba'osa isha ba'oso perik ba'oso makam. It's with the same woman, the same age that you're in, and in the same place. Okay, so Rashi says like this, and yeah, meaning like you're still young.
So as opposed to being old. Kind of soon after.
Right? Yeah, I mean, you'll see from Rashi. I think Rashi is going to say that that's not necessarily the case. So this is my interpretation of Rashi. Okay, I'll read it, then I'll interpret it. But osa isha bosa makom sha'avar sham, with the same woman and the same place that you transgressed, ha'avera, but also perek, and also perek in that same period of life. Okay, why? Mitok shedoma mikol vakol, since it is exactly identical, Lizman Shanikshabo, to the time when you stumbled, Kvar Yitzro Misgaber Alav, then your Yitzro will overpower or will threaten to overpower you, the Omerlo, and it will say, Re'e Plonis, look at that woman, that specific woman, but also Makum in that place, but also Perik, and that this time of life, Kum Ase Masha Asisa Kvar, get up and do what you wanted to do. So Rashi is saying that what makes it tshuva, the reason why we care about all these same details is because it arouses the Yetzer Hara in the same way, you know? So the essence though of tshuva gemura is that your Yetzer Hara was aroused to that same degree. It's not that we care about the same particulars. Like, I don't know if this is possible, but if you could do an MRI, you know, and the exact same, like, you know, hormones would be released and neurotransmitters and stuff with a different woman, then that I would say that that's also tshuva gemura. You know, the essence is that it's the same like struggle and conflict to fighting with your yetzer. Yeah.
So the definition of that struggle is going to require at least two things to be struggling, right?
Yeah.
So you have your yetzer.
Yeah.
Which let's say, okay, it really is the exact same yetzer later, but just like the first time.
Yeah.
You have some other component to you, whatever you call that, call it yetzer tov, just to simplify things. Couldn't the secondary time it be that your yetzer tov is now stronger and the back then it was weaker, and that's why it's not an identical situation?
That's entirely possible. Yeah.
So maybe that's what the other one who Rabbi Yehuda was it?
Yeah.
Was maybe that's why he feels like it needs to be so exact in that moment, because like you're close to that. Mm-hmm. You haven't had a chance to develop other things that might give you a better chance to you know, that it changes the circumstance to some...
Right, but you Rabbi Yehuda's only pointing out factors that would increase your Yetzer Hara, right? Now your Yetzer Tov.
So that's the question I have in general.
Yeah.
Why are they discussing that half and not the increase?
Right, so I think the assumption, and this is certainly the Rambam's assumption, I don't know about the Gemara, the Rambam's assumption is that you did the same, you've done Tshuva, so your Yetzer Tov is modified from the Tshuva itself.
Right.
Right.
So it's like a
so it's like course. Needless to say, but it's like needless to say.
Isn't that the point?
Yeah, that's the point, right?
I find like a question like, oh, that's the point,
right?
That you're right, and you're
right.
Exactly. That's, no, I agree. So if it's the point, then how could it ever be the same identical situation? Because now you're post teshuva. This in a strong Yetzer Tov when you can never repeat that.
Doesn't take the same setting, not like the exact same.
Same setting, fine, but I. But there weren't just the settings component. It was also like your internal makeup
component. Right, so you're asking a question saying that the balance is not going to be exactly equal because you leveled up your Yetzer Tov?
Yeah.
Yeah. I hear that question. I mean, I hear the question. I don't know. I guess it's not exactly the same.
Well, it's not something that you're necessarily lowering.
Right. Yeah. And I do want to point out on that, and I'll call you in a second, Yosef, that by the way, Teshuvah Gemurah is not the highest level of perfection. The higher level of perfection is you've changed yourself so much that you no longer have the Yetzer Hara, right? But this is just the paradigmatic act of Teshuvah. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu is not going to have any of these Yetzer Haras anyway, right? Does that mean he's not going to have this Yetzer Hara anyway, right? Does that mean he's on a lower level? No, of course not. It's just that he's not engaging in the paradigmatic act of Teshuvah. And that's the Rambam's goal, is to highlight this is the pristine act of Teshuvah. Yeah.
Is that everything is the same, or everything except you is supposed to be the same?
Everything except you is supposed to be the same. Yeah, that's a good way to say it. Yeah, as right. But you can change in your Yetzer Hara and your Yetzer Tov. Yeah. I want to think more about your question, because, yeah, I feel like there's more... If we formulate it differently, then I might be able to find inroads to it. But yeah.
There is one idea, and I don't know how we hold here in our Shiva. This is a universal idea that like someone who maybe, I don't know, that's Sadiq in the traditional sense of like where you're saying something about Yitzhara, but at least that the path towards that you would think that, oh, it's like lessening and lessening Yitzhara, but rather as you become like a more, I don't know, a more Kedusha, whatever,
yeah,
like, holy person, you're actually in tandem with that, your Yitzhara grows as well.
Yeah.
So it's like these gadol actually have great Yetzer Hara.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So actually
that keeps this proportional.
It could be that's actually why I use Moshe Rabbeinu as an example, because what you're saying is the what Chazal say is the tendency is gadol kol gadol mechaber Yetzer gadol hamenu. The greater of a person you are, the greater Yetzer Hara is. And I actually spent like a couple of weeks this summer delving into that sugya. So maybe I'll go share on it later on this year.
Proportionally, yeah. While it might be true that your Yetzer Tov grew, so did your Yetzer Hara, so that even if your Yetzer Hara is different,
yeah,
it's in terms of relationship to your Yetzer Tov, the same as it was back then. So in that sense, you are the same person.
Could be. I don't know if it's going to be equal.
Just an idea.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's an important point, though. Yeah.
The point is
that, right. You've isolated the variable of Tshuva.
Yeah.
Of Tshuva on the
chait, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Yeah, who told me that the scene where Galadriel rejects the ring is a good model of what this looks like in... It wasn't you, yeah. It was either you. No, okay, yeah. Some of it was Rindy then, yeah. Yeah. All right, anyway, let's stop now. We're already going over time, but okay. We'll figure out what to do next week.
If you've gained from what you've learned here today, please consider contributing to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/RabbiSchneeWeiss. Alternatively, if you would like to make a direct contribution to the Rabbi Schneeweiss Torah Content Fund, my Venmo is @Matt-Schneeweiss, and my Zelle/Chase QuickPay and PayPal are MattSchneeweiss@gmail.com. Even a small contribution goes a long way to covering the cost of my podcast and will provide me with the financial freedom to produce even more Torah content for you. If you would like to sponsor an article, shiur, or podcast episode, or if you are interested in enlisting my services as a teacher or tutor, you can reach me at rabbischneeweiss@gmail.com. Thank you to my listeners for listening, thank you to my readers for reading, and thank you to my supporters for supporting my efforts to make Torah ideas available and accessible to everyone.